Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. I'm Andy Warren and I'm joined by a man who once threw a kettle over a pub. That's Stuart Watson.
It's a true story, yeah.
A mythical feat coming from David Brent, The Office. But you've done it. You've thrown a kettle over a pub. Can you tell us how that happened?
I can. I didn't know we'd be sharing this story today to a wider public. But yeah, at the end of my wedding night, from The Office, obviously. And I went for... Yes, I did go for the shoelace method, if you're asking.
I knew you would. We're not here to talk about kettles and pubs. We're here to talk about Ipswich Town. And we are recording this Sunday morning, a few hours removed from getting home in the middle of the night. From Sunderland, which 1,000 Ipswich fans did yesterday. A very impressive travelling support at Sunderland. But what a fun day we had, Stu. I really enjoyed myself at Sunderland.
Yeah, it's good. I thought you'd like the stadium a lot. It's a proper football ground, isn't it? Big ground, and they're still turning out in force, the Sunderland fans. I think best part of 28,000 there for the game yesterday, and of which 1,000 were Ipswich fans, which is mightily impressive for a 550-mile round trip. So I'm really pleased for them that they got to see a good performance and a much-needed win.
We'll get on to the performance in a minute, but I had a really bad food day yesterday, Stu.
Me too.
10 hours in the car, followed by some food at Sunderland, was a horrendous day. We both started with dessert at 10 a.m.
Calorific day, wasn't it? We started off at the OK Diner about 10 a.m. Our favourite haunt. French toast for me. Stack of pancakes for you.
I did have a stack of pancakes. I requested that it would come with strawberries, and it came with bacon, and that set the tone.
Unsolicited bacon.
It was unsolicited, but I ate it. It also came with a tub of butter, which I left. Then a nice chilli at Sunderland, and some fried chicken on the way home.
Yeah, and there was a pie as well. Don't forget, there's a pie at full time. So, all in all, life on the road is not for healthy living, is it?
No, certainly not. But all that's forgotten. A 2-0 win for Ipswich Town. Joe Garner with number 10 for the season for him. I think that ties him at the top of the scoring charts with Martin Waghorn now. And an own goal as well, which sadly didn't go into the net off Freddie Sears. I'm sure there were plenty of people there, Freddie leading them, hoping that it was him that scored it. Sadly didn't. But a good result against a team they really should have been beating, really, if there's any hope at all of a playoff push.
Yeah, come on to Freddie in a minute, but in terms of the overall performance, they had to ride a storm in the early stages, first 20 minutes, half an hour. Sunderland were the better side. They were playing some decent football. Two of their deadline day signings were proving a real handful. Azaria on loan from Liverpool in midfield was looking very lively. Ashley Fletcher up front was proving a handful. And I think if Asoro scores from a very good chance, it might have been a different story. Had Sunderland scored that first goal, the crowd would have come alive. And it could have been different, but ifs, buts and maybes, they didn't. Ipswich, I have to say, defended very well. I thought Chambers in particular was excellent. Defensively, Carter Vickers as well. Chambers was more of your sort of all-action blocks, headers, all the rest of it. Carter Vickers was a bit more of a smoother reading of the game, interceptions. But between the two of them, they shackled Fletcher. Mick made a few good tactical tweaks, actually. He got Skuse doing a man-marking job on Azaria. And they worked their way into the game. Garner scores a really good goal, really good old-fashioned number 9 goal, wasn't it? Back to goal in the box. Holds it up, chest, thigh, swivels, bottom corner. And once that goal went in, you could see Sunderland's shoulders slump, couldn't you? This is a team that's won twice on their own patch since the start of 2017. So once you strike the first blow against them, you could see that the belief just drained from them. And then for Ipswich to score a second, seconds before the half-time whistle, that really was the killer blow, really. And they never looked like coming back into it. Just a professional job from Ipswich in the second half to see the game out.
We talk about this playoff push, which sometimes has a little bit of momentum behind it, but quite often doesn't. But for Sunderland, can you see Sunderland going anywhere but down? It's got a feeling of a club that's sinking, as I felt yesterday.
Yeah, and it's a reminder, I think, for all of us associated with Ipswich Town that things could be a lot worse. You know, for all of our analysis of Ipswich being stuck in the Championship, you look at a big club like Sunderland, you know, now staring very much down the barrel of back-to-back relegations. There's just something about them. Mick McCarthy used the analogy, it's like trying to turn an oil tank around with a canoe paddle. Yeah, it's just when you get on that negative, you know, momentum can take hold both positive and negative. And Ipswich aren't, you know, they've never been able to get the real positive momentum going. But likewise, we've never really seen, you never really sense that they'll go into a negative spiral either. And Sunderland are very much on one of those at the moment. And in answer to your question, I can't see them getting out of it. And it will be another big football club, potentially in League One next year. And you look at the teams that have been down there in recent history, both Sheffield clubs, Leicester,
Leeds
of Norwich, course. Norwich, Southampton.
Charlton are still there.
Yeah. So it's just a little reminder that everything about Ipswich, and I've written this recently, isn't completely broken about Ipswich. And again, a reminder yesterday with the joyous team celebrations, and we got some cracking pictures of Mick McCarthy celebrating at the end with a clenched fist and a roar at the final whistle, and Ian Milne in the stands getting rather carried away as well. And just a reminder of the way the players all celebrated together, that there's plenty of team spirit about this club at the moment. They've got their limitations. We know they have. Was it a outstanding performance yesterday? No, but it was spirited, and it was everything that we know that Ipswich are, and they've plucked a result out of the bag when they need it, as they so often have done.
On the subject of celebrations, though, that both goals were really interesting celebration-wise. I think everyone's seen the pictures of the players mobbing Freddie as he reluctantly was involved in a celebration for a goal that he clearly knew was an own goal. But the first one, Joe Garner's, Joe Garner put it in the bottom corner, a really good goal. He charges off towards the bench, leaves his teammate celebrating. You think he's going to jump into Mick's arms or something, or give TC a nice cuddle, but he just, so nonchalant, just had a little drink. But really bizarre.
Very strange. And I put that to Mick afterwards. I said, because he turned and he sprinted 50 yards towards the bench, which looked like intent. And we were saying to each other, who's he going to? And he just casually went over to one of the seats, picked up his water bottle, and I said to Mick afterwards, and he said, apparently he just wanted a drink, and it just looked as quizzical and bemused as we all were, really. So, very strange, that one. But the way the players all celebrated together, while Joe was having his little sip from his water bottle, the rest of the players were sort of all in a group hug together. And the one with Freddie, you're right, like, you can just tell how much they're desperate for Freddie to score. And you know, they know he's gone through a difficult time with, you know, a much talked about goal drought and losing his place in the side and being played out of position more often than not. You know, they were all desperate for Freddie to get that goal. But he knew the muted celebration straight away. He was almost sort of shrugging people off as if to say, no, I can't claim that one, guys. So it's a shame he didn't get his goal, but I'm sure his confidence will just go up one notch from getting a rare start yesterday. And played his part in a win. Was he outstanding? No. A couple of times, you know, he streaked away on the counter attack in really good opportunities, and he just picks the wrong pass at the moment. He's just a little bit of indecision and a lack of confidence on the ball. But boy, does he work hard off of it. It was typical industry from him, selfless industry. And I think in the end, Mick's team selection was spot on. We had a good chat about it beforehand. It seemed to be almost universally unpopular when Freddie got the nod ahead of Bersant Salina, but I could see the logic, and I'm not being smart with hindsight here because we said this before the game, that I could see the logic behind Mick playing perhaps a couple more of the reliable, defensively diligent grafters on the wing in Freddie and Grant Ward for a tough away game. And I think that played its part in them weathering the storm earlier on, and in the end it proved a masterstroke, because I thought Grant Ward was outstanding. Freddie played a key role in the game as well, and we have to give credit to Mick, because he's made a bold decision, one that the fans perhaps weren't happy with, and it's come off.
Mick gave us an interesting insight into his man management skills, I thought, after the game. That we know Mick's a good man manager. He's universally praised by his players for that aspect of his work. But he talked about how he spoke to Freddie at the start of last week, how he played him in the under-23s at a very wet Playford Road on Monday, which by the sounds of things Freddie wasn't overly enthusiastic about. But Mick explained that rather than tell him that on Sunday, which sounds like the norm, you'd tell him on a Sunday you're playing tomorrow, he sprung it on him on a Monday morning just because he thought Freddie would react better. And I thought it was interesting that the way Mick explained that, and we'll just hear from Mick now.
The way the boys tried to celebrate with Freddie after the goal tells you everything about how much they're willing him to get that goal and end that run. I think they were desperate for him.
Of course they did. Well, I think it just shows the level of team spirit that's in that our squad and the camaraderie that's there. They're a great bunch. They are fantastic lads. So it's nice to see that.
Yeah, Freddie is, it would have been easy for his head to drop. He's got a long time without a goal. He's not been a regular in your team of late. But he's always ready to go for you, isn't he?
Well, they all played in the 23s last week, and so often 23s managers would bemoan the fact that I'm putting first team players in to have a game. And actually, Freddie, I didn't phone him on the Sunday to tell him he was playing, because I thought I don't want to piss his Sunday and his Monday off. So I thought I'll wait and I'll tell him Monday when he comes in for training. And I did piss him off, I have to be honest. He wasn't happy, but then he went, "Yeah, all right, Gaffer." And he went and did it properly. That's, I think, well, they should do it properly. Come on, you've all watched 23's games. First team was playing it. Don't do it properly. But Webbo did, Wardy did, Luke Iam did, and they win the game. And it's testimony to them that they've kept their heads up and keep doing it. And then they can play like that. That's because they do it right, so...
Where does Freddie go from here then? Can you see him starting next weekend against Burton? There's obviously, if you looked round to the bench, there was Bersad Salina there, a very popular figure, Mustafa Carriol there, who's yet to kick a ball for Ipswich. There's two players waiting to take his place, but if he's going to find any form, he has to play. And sadly, I don't see the regular run of games coming for Freddie.
No, not with the system that they're playing at the moment with... very much Joe Garner as the lead striker with Waghorn just in behind. There's no central striker role there for Freddie Sears, and he's made no secret of the fact that's still his best position and he'd prefer to be playing there. Bersant Salina's started 15 of the previous 17 games, so for all the talk about him not being a Mick McCarthy type player at the start of the season, and it was the Burton reverse fixture where we had all the fallout of Mick's comments about what time he brought him on and him scoring the last minute winner and having a bit of a pop at the fans about all of that. But since then he's very much become a nailed on starter under Mick, much like Tom Lawrence. The previous year, I think it took him a number of weeks before he really sort of nailed down his starting place. So what Mick does with Freddie on Saturday is an interesting one, because A, he likes to stick with a winning side, Mick McCarthy in general. If you look at that, I think that needs to be said. But B, it's a different type of game. I think Freddie was kind of picked very specifically for the circumstances of an away game against the team scrapping for their lives at the bottom. Perhaps at home, when the onus will be on Ipswich to break Burton down, and he might feel that the creative qualities of Salina might be a bit better for that game. So, Freddie's long-term future. If I was him, I think was he 28 now? Just probably might feel that he might want another challenge. And this is no inside information, but I just wonder whether Freddie might be one like Brett Pittman last year, where Mick kind of feels that they're almost at the end of their cycle and it's not quite happening for them, and he might sort of tell other clubs that he's available if they want him and do something a little bit different, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, that's one for the summer, but I think for now Freddie, he seems very intent and focused on winning a regular place in the side. I spoke to him after the game, and here's just a little clip of what Freddie had to say.
How hard has this season been for you? It must be hard scratching around for minutes, and it's hard to get the form when you're not getting the minutes.
Yeah, it's been tough. Obviously I've been out of the team, and
boys have been doing well, so I can't have no complaints. So you just got to keep working hard, get your head down and just be ready when called on, and hopefully you can get a run of games and start picking up form again.
What's Mick said to you over this time? Is it a case of just bide your time, you'll get your chance, that kind of thing?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, TC and Gaffer have been brilliant. You know, I know how football works, I've been around it long enough, and the boys have been brilliant. Bursat's been brilliant, Garn's been brilliant, Wags and even Didzy when he's played. So it's been a tough season, but the Gaffer and TC have always been positive, saying wait your time and be ready, and you've got to take your chance when you come in. You know, I've come in sometimes and not done as well as I should have, and today I think I've done well, so happy days.
Is it a cliche, but is it a case of one goes in, some more might follow? Is that?
Yeah, hopefully, you know, obviously at the minute the main thing is winning games. You know, obviously I want to be scoring goals, but playing a slightly different position is probably not my best position, but sort of doing it for the team. But you know, it's delighted today, back in the team, 3 points, and really happy.
I think we've been talking about your position for 2 or 3 years. Do you still see yourself as a central striker? It's not, obviously you've not had many chances to play there.
No, I do. You know, I think the game's changing now. 4-4-2, me and two up front is my best position. I think that showed when I first come in. Me and Murph was up top, but football, different formations now. You normally see a lot of one up top, and I'm probably not going to be considered as the one up top. It's normally like a bigger man or a guy who's good in the air. So it's football, you know. I'm happy. Got to keep working hard and see where it takes me.
He's quite honest there, Stu, in saying that he wants to play as one of a front two in a 4-4-2, and that isn't there for him at Ipswich. If he is going to stay at Ipswich long term, he needs to adapt into one of these wide roles under Mick, otherwise it's just not going to happen, it seems.
Yeah, and that's the issue that we've just touched upon, really. That Mick seems very set on this 4-2-3-1 system. They've played that now for a pretty long time. Waghorn hasn't worked for me in the wider areas. He's more effective through the middle. They've got 10 goals apiece now, Garner and Waghorn, so he's not going to dislodge either of those. Part of me would be interested to see Garner and Sears as a front two at some stage if Waghorn for whatever reason wasn't available, because Garner's best football has been at Preston when it was him and Beckford, you know, almost Beckford being the pacey front man on the last shoulder, you know, Garner roughing up centre backs and Beckford sort of running off the shoulder, and you know, Sears might benefit from that sort of role, but it's not there for him at the moment. So what we do have to say is, you know, we have to say well done to Freddie for, you know, a lot of players that have gone through what he's gone through the last 18 months would have sulked, would have not kept themselves 100% right, which sounds a silly thing to say, but it happens. And he's always been ready when called upon. He always gives his all when he pulls on the blue shirt. And I think as a fan, you know, that's the minimum that you can ask for. But as I say, long term, it just doesn't seem like he's a right fit for the club at this moment in time. And it's really sad because when he came here from Colchester, he hit the ground running. He scored plenty of goals. But for one reason or another, that's kind of drained away now, and it's difficult to see him getting those regular starts that he will need to get back into it. But I hope I'm wrong, and I hope he can come back in and do really well, because he's a really, really nice guy, as we all know. But just not quite happening for him at the moment.
And as we mentioned, added pressure from Mustafa Carriol, who we've yet to see on the unused substitute on Saturday, but you know, you get the impression he's ready. He seems to say he's ready to hit the ground running, and you know, that's another option. And Ipswich could realistically now play with two wide men in every game if you've got Ward fit, Salina, Mustafa, Carriol all ready to go. There's out and out wingers in Ipswich, which hasn't always been the case under Mick in recent years.
No, I think they're much less important to say that. I thought Saturday was more proof that Ipswich look a lot more balanced with some natural width in there. Grant Ward is far more of an outlet on the counter attack than sort of crowbarring, shoehorning David McGoldrick in there. That's not helped. I thought they looked a lot better when it's been sort of Salina and Ward on the flanks, giving them some natural width. So yeah, Ward was impressive for me. For someone that's missed a lot of games, or a few games recently with a groin injury, he was very good. I'd go as far as saying that potentially was his best performance for Ipswich, which is pretty bold considering he scored a hat-trick on his debut. But yeah, just gives them a little bit more balance when they've got some natural width in that side, I think.
Carrion is, he says he's fit to play. We'll play just a little bit of our interview with him from earlier in the week in a moment. But do you know what my favourite thing about Mozzie is?
What's that?
His laugh. He had a little laugh at the end of the press conference on, what day was it, Thursday. I really like it. Here it is. Cheeky.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. Yeah. Can you maybe keep a little file of all of the town players' laughs, and we could have a comparison at some stage?
Ipswich Town laugh-a-thon. I like it. First entry, Mozzie Carrion.
Yeah, he seems an upbeat, lively character, doesn't he? Mm. For someone that's never really kind of settled at any one club. I think we've seen his talent. Speaking to fans of some of the clubs that he's been at before, they say he's either excellent and you know, really terrorises his opposition fullback, as I remember him tearing Luke Chambers to pieces in a game when he was at Middlesbrough.
So does Luke, by all accounts.
Does he? Yeah, I'm not surprised. So I'm sure that's stuck in Mick's mind when they've recruited him. But I think equally he can have other games where he's very much on the periphery and is quite anonymous. So it's just trying to now tap into that ability, I guess, with him. And, you know, he'll be hoping that he can find a home here at Ipswich, because he needs to, you know, what is he, 29? And he needs to sort of settle down. And he's another one that needs to get regular game time. Stephen Gleeson, you know, the flip side, I've written plenty about how Ipswich now find themselves in an unfortunate situation with a lot of players facing uncertain futures this summer. It's far from ideal, with lots of loan players and short-term contracts and all the rest of it. But, you know, there is a counter-argument that these players have got a bit of fire in their belly and a point to prove, and they need to get themselves contracts and make sure that they're employed footballers next summer. So Ipswich might not realistically have a lot to play for in terms of positions and all the rest of it. You know, the players as individuals have certainly got a fair bit to play for.
Do you know, another thing I found very interesting about talking to Muzzy was that London-based footballers all meet up to play a lot of five-a-side in the summer. He's good friends with Frank Noble, who he talked to before his move to Ipswich, and he was telling us on Thursday how in the summer him and Frank and a lot of the other South London-based professionals just meet up to play five-a-side in the summer. Imagine stumbling across that if you're walking through the park. We'll just let Muzzy explain that.
Yeah, I gave him a call on the way down. He's one of my close friends, and he just said, listen, if you've got a chance to go and play for the Gaffer, go and play for him. Like, I know what type of player you are, and I know how he is, and he'll just let you express yourself, and I think that's what you need. So yeah, he helped me make my decision quite quickly.
How do you two know each other? How far back do you go?
Well, we're from the same area. We're from South London, so we kind of grew up together and playing football. So we always play five-a-side in the summer, so we're pretty close. So I don't know if people do it all over the country, but in London it's quite a tradition that all the footballers just come to try and keep fit and their sharpness. So you get to see everyone from like the London area. So yeah, it's good.
Imagine stumbling across these guys, just a load of professional footballers just messing about playing professional football.
Just at your local goals centre or something like that, and on the pitch next to you, yeah. Who else would be South London based? I reckon people like Bolasie and Zaha and the like are all involved in that. That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if they do that round here. Tip up at goals in Ipswich and you've got the Ipswich boys, Luke Hyam and the boys, just playing against them. Be very, very strange. One other bit of transfer deadline news was Flynn Downs, who departed on loan to the League Two leaders Luton. He made his debut on Saturday and by all accounts absolutely ran the show, and everybody's gleaming about him. He's certainly made a very quick impression at Luton.
Yeah, man of the match by all accounts, played at the base of the diamond that Nathan Jones plays for Luton. Yeah, universal praise, sort of looking at some of the reports, how well he played. I mean, that takes some, doesn't it? 19-year-old lad to go to a team that's top of the table and be put straight into the team and be man of the match.
Right decision to send him out, do you think? It seems a bit split amongst people that would like to have seen him playing here every week.
For me, yes, but I can understand that there's two sides to the argument here. I can understand Ipswich fans saying there's not realistically a huge amount to play for between now and the end of the season, so why not use these collection of dead rubbers to kind of start developing our own players and really working on this 5-point plan that's centred around producing academy talent and all the rest of it. But for me, yes, I think it is the right decision. Yes, I think Flynn Downes is the real deal, and I think he's, you know, he more than showed that he is a capable championship player when he burst on the scene. Box to box, gets stuck in, positive with the way he plays as well. I think he's got a very bright future. But we have got to remember here that the caveat is he had injuries, he had calf problems, then he was complaining of basically what sounds like chronic fatigue, where they had to send him off for blood tests because, you know, he just said he felt like the plug had been pulled out of him. So I think Mick McCarthy sort of felt that both him and Tristan Nydam, as, you know, 17, 18-year-olds, had, you know, maybe just suffered from a little bit of overplaying and, you know, emotionally, all everything that sort of goes through, you know, your breakthrough time. And he had to take a little bit of a step back from it. And during that time, of course, Callum Connolly has really sort of impressed in that central midfield role. Cole Skews is nailed on in that position. He's brought Stephen Gleeson in as well. So,
and Luke Hines come back from injury.
Yeah, and done pretty well since he's come back. So really, if he's not going to start week in, week out here, he's better off being in that environment at Luton, where, you know, I'm sure if he plays as he has done by all accounts at the weekend, he'll come back, you know, hopefully with a promotion on his CV, feeling 10-foot tall, and will be ready to go, because next year there might not be so many in front of him. Gleeson might not be here. Cole Skews might not be here. Who knows what the future holds for a few players in that position. Connolly as well, you know, his loan will be up. So for me, I think, yes, it probably is the right decision.
Next up, Burton. So they've played the bottom two weeks in a row. This one's at Portman Road, and we talk about these playoff hopes, Stu, and we talk about them sometimes being a faux playoff push, but if there's any sense of a playoff push existing, you've got to beat the bottom side at home, don't you? It's a must-win game.
Yeah, without sounding too pessimistic, I don't think that the playoffs is going to happen. 8 points means you've got to win 3 more games than those teams up there. Realistically, was it just the one spot that's up for grabs? And you were saying yesterday, it often feels the way that Ipswich have got a long chase for potentially one spot to sneak into. There's just too many teams to climb over, as well as the points as well, sitting in 12th place. But regardless of all that, they need momentum for just to generate some feel-good factor. It's been this inconsistency that's kind of not helped things. It's, you know, having won their opening 5, they've not had many back-to-back wins since
once.
Then.
They've won back-to-back games once since then.
Mm-hmm. And then the season before, obviously, that only happened once, back-to-back wins, and that was in Easter, wasn't it? So, football's about momentum, as we discussed earlier. So they need to back up that performance and that win at Sunderland by doing the same against Burton on Saturday at home. And then it just creates a nice little platform to head off to Carrow Road over the border a week on Sunday, doesn't it? And realistically, sort of that battle with that mob up the road, sort of that game and who finishes higher is will play a big part in how people feel. And once that game's out the way, then I think the more pertinent questions about the manager's future and players' future and all the rest of it will only get louder and louder.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about with those going forward. But Stu, I think we've time to move on to our closing Football Room 101s. Last week, another success for you. 62% voted with your half and half scarves to put them in ahead of badly organised, badly picked FA Cup television games. So thankfully, half and half scarves confined to Room 101. If only they could be removed permanently. What have you got for us this week?
Well, this one's probably maybe a bit more of a pet hate for me. I don't know if other people will buy into this one, but it's team names that get shortened and quite often misshortened. So the classic example is people who call Nottingham Forest Notts Forest, and this really winds up Forest fans because it's Notts County, but it's Nottingham Forest. And if you're gonna short it in print, it's N-O-T-T-M. If you really want to shorten it, but don't ever call them Notts Forest. So that's just a little pet hate of mine.
I've got a few of those as well. Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
It's not Middlesbrough, it's Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
And Man U. I can't be doing with Man U. Even United is better than that. There's about 25 other Uniteds, but yeah, please don't call them Man U.
Yeah, it's a bit... we're guilty in print sometimes of making things fit headlines and shortening things. But yeah, just in general conversation, yeah, Man United, I can just about abide. Man U is, I don't know, maybe we're being a bit bar humbug here, but we're being a bit pedantic, but that's what we do.
No, another thing I didn't realise until we got to Sunderland yesterday, obviously we know they're called the Black Cats and all that, and there's the Hawaii, the Lads.
Yeah.
They actually, another nickname is the Lads. Do you know that? They call themselves...
Only because you spotted something in the programme, yeah.
The Lads victory at, capital L, the Lads victory at wherever they won last. I like it.
The Lads, the Mackhams as well, but yeah. I didn't know the Lads won.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
We need to have a debate on Tractor Boys at some stage another day. Whether people are happy with this or not. I've never used it in print.
Yeah.
Because I'm never quite sure whether people have fully embraced it. It gets sung on the terraces and all the rest of it, but I don't know if people...
Not as much as it used to, though. Every goal was greeted by 1-0. Well, not every goal, but 1-0 to the Tractor Boys. We don't necessarily hear that anymore.
I'd be interested if people would like to see us adopt it in print a bit more, but maybe
should we put a poll out?
Let's do something on that for another day. Yeah,
we'll have a little vote on that. My entry, Football Room 101, is a personal experience from yesterday. The state of football ground toilets. My word. Is what happened in the toilet in the what had happened during the day in that toilet at Sunderland, my word, it was like the apocalypse in there.
Mm.
How it's full of adults largely. How can they be so disgusting?
One of our travel companions did eat 4 eggs on the way up. So I'm not pointing any fingers. But yeah,
I don't know if I need to say any more because I'm sure everybody's seen them. They're...
Barnsley's the one that sticks in my mind. They've still got the open air urinals, which is just basically a brick wall that you just nip round the back of. And have a little piddle there. That's all part of the football experience, though, isn't it? Some grotty toilets and a Bovril and a...
Well, don't even put the Bovril and the grotty toilet in the same ballpark.
Mm.
It cannot be a nice hot mug of beef. Anyway, I think that's enough. That's enough for us, Stu. I'm going to get off for a Bovril. Thank you for listening, everyone. We'll put a poll out for our Football Room 101 as usual, and you can help us out with that. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in print and online throughout the week, and we'll catch you soon.